keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Anti Media Radio once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and welcome to the show. We got a great show lined up for you tonight. We got an awesome guest here in the studio with us. Jake Anderson is joining us. He's one of our new team members on the Anti-Media. How you doing, man?
I am good, and I'm very glad to be here. How are you, Nick?
I'm pretty good, man. You know, it's been a long day. We've got like 14, 15 articles up tonight on the Anti-Media, so it's definitely been a work in progress.
It's a lot of articles for one day.
It is, but you know what? A lot of news came out today, so...
I think Rupert Murdoch would be flabbergasted.
We're also joined by our special co-host tonight, Manny. How you doing tonight, man?
Hey, Nick. How you doing? Looking forward to hearing a good show tonight and stuff like that. We like to talk about different topics all the time. And so everybody listening out there, don't forget to listen, you know, to the Anti-Media show, stuff like that. No se nos olvide que este show pueden ustedes hablar. El Anti-Media Show con el conductor Nick Burnaby y con su servidor, co-conductor Manny Aguilar, en cualquier tema que ustedes quieran. Bienvenidos, gente latina, al programa de Anti-Media que está de pasado en San Diego. Pueden ustedes hablar a cualquier tiempo y hablar de cualquier tema. Gracias. Take it away, Nick.
Hey, Manny, thanks for the awesome intro in Spanish. That's one of the directions that we've been hoping to go to soon in the near future, is like bring in a little more Spanish content, getting our articles translated over into Spanish, because you know a lot of people that speak Spanish, or you know, a lot of people in countries that speak Spanish as well, this content, you know, we have a lot of things in common, because especially if you think about Latin America, Central America, South America, Mexico, U.S. policies are damaging a lot of these countries. Mexico is a prime example with the drug war. I mean, 50,000 people, I think, last year in Mexico died because of the drug war. And in many ways, in many, many ways, that's very much upon the shoulders of the U.S. taxpayer and the people that allow our government to incriminate drugs and allow these black market, you know, not black market, but underground mafia type of situations to come about. You know, that's on us. In many ways, that's on us as Americans, you know, letting that happen. So people around the world that are in the Spanish-speaking world also want to know about what we're dealing with, and we cover stuff from all around the world all the time as well. So, you know, that's another direction that we want to go in the near future. But we got all kinds of crazy news tonight. You know, the big thing, I guess, that's international, we'll start with that, is what's going on in Germany right now. Over in Frankfurt, they're building, they've built the new European Central Bank. And, you know, basically this bank costs $1.4 billion translated into from euro to build. Meanwhile, the whole eurozone is basically going through a really tough economic time, and these people are wondering why they're spending so much money on the European bank. But an even larger, you know, a larger aspect, you know, the bigger picture here is that we're talking about the bank for all of Europe, and we're talking about a central fiat bank. And this is very much like the Federal Reserve. You know, it's very similar in that way that it controls the monetary policy for millions, hundreds of millions of people. And as people have noticed, and as anybody can see from the numbers, it's created a huge wealth disparity. And it's basically the same exact thing that the Federal Reserve has done. It's created what used to be an economy where it was most of the wealth was in the working class, the middle class, to an economy where most of the wealth is aggregated into the hands of a few rich Wall Street types or bankers. And so in Germany, in Frankfurt today, earlier this morning, they had protest, what started as protests, but turned into riots, man. And they started torching cop cars. They started, you know, attacking the cops, breaking through barricades. I mean, these guys were getting serious over there, right? So, I mean, you're starting to see this frustration pouring over from people being disenfranchised from the economic system. You know, and people willing to put their lives on the line. I mean, there was over 100 people, 100 protesters injured. I don't know if anybody was killed. I don't think they were. And that's a big difference between here and Germany. If it were here, people probably would have got shot. But over there, nobody was killed. They arrested 500 plus protesters. Over 100, I don't know, 150, 200 people were injured. 90 cops were injured. I mean, this was big. And it just goes to show people are starting to realize that central banking is at the root of a lot of the problems that the world is facing. You know, monetary policy, unfortunately, is dictating the real lives of people all over the world. And it's something that we need to really – it's one of these issues that really comes to the root of many of the problems. And that's why we have to focus on this. And that's why it was so great to see these people in Germany standing up and actually – I mean – of course, rioting is always a questionable practice, but these guys are rioting against the right reasons. You know, this is the central bank. These are the people that create the monetary policy. They're the ones that got Greece into the situation that they're in. And keep in mind, central banks aren't owned. People like to pretend that they're these public utilities or something, companies.
Corporations.
They're corporations. They're privately owned, privately run by and their board members are made up of mostly banksters, Goldman Sachs. I mean, Goldman Sachs plays a major role in both the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve, you know. And so this stuff, this is going towards the root of the problem. And that's why I think it's so encouraging to see these people in Germany like standing up to the central bank. It's unprecedented to see that. In the U.S., you've never seen that much of a resistance to the Federal Reserve. I don't know. I mean, maybe back in 1913 when it was first created, was a resistance back then that we never heard about. But nowadays, you hardly ever see a big resistance to the Fed. Yeah, there was that whole end the Fed movement when Ron Paul was, you know, 2012, end the Fed and all that stuff. And that was cool. And that got a lot of people to know about, okay, the Federal Reserve. A lot of people didn't even know about it before then, right?
Are there even 10,000 people in the U.S. that know what the Federal Reserve is?
Well, yeah, there's definitely 10,000. Because I think all of our fans know.
I'm being facetious, but yeah.
But yeah, you know, before then, before 2012, not that many people knew about it. You know, before the Zeitgeist movement, and before all those videos came out, not that many people knew about the Fed.
Right.
But it's great to see people around the world standing up to central banking in one way or another. So, I don't know. I guess that's our big international story of the day. There's just so much other stuff to cover, though. I mean, we've got all these police state stories. We've got this drought in California, and we were talking about this too earlier, and how Nestle is like still bottling the water.
Unbelievable.
Like, they're still bottling the groundwater.
Unbelievable. Nestle, the company Nestle is there. They're bottling the water we don't have, desperately need, and selling it back to us. This should be, water is a right. I mean, when did water not become a natural human right? we're running out of it, you know.
Yeah, and the planet is made up of like a huge percentage of water, right? And it's just like it's kind of.
Well,
what was that?
I said, down your way, Nick. I know that San Diego County. A lot of people don't know that down there in San Diego County, but you get your a lot of your water from Imperial County, and you guys also get a lot of your you know, fruits and vegetables from Imperial County. Most people in the county don't know that, but I'm sure you do, right?
I do now. But yeah, you know, our water supply is basically running out, and you know, the Earth is made up of a lot of water. 5% or more of the Earth is water. This is like, you know, it kind of goes back, like what we're facing now is it's kind of problematic because we built on, you know, whoever came up with the idea to build in Southern California, they built huge, giant cities on deserts, you know, and so we kind of have to rely on either shipping the water in or pulling it out of the ocean. And that's what they're starting to do right now in San Diego. They're building this big desalination plant that's going to, you know, give water to millions of families. And it's going to be done in 2016. But, you know, here's the thing. Like, we've known we've been on this desert for like 100 years, ever since they started building these places. Like, why hasn't there ever been preparations before to bring the water down here?
Because the free market will always save us.
Yeah, they've like let it play out in this manner where no one ever thought ahead and said, okay, well, we're gonna go ahead and like get the water situation, you know, settled so that people don't have to worry about it, you know. And right now we rely on all these deals being made between the people that own the rights to the Colorado River and whoever's gonna how much are they gonna let us have and all that stuff. And it kind of goes back to what was going on over in Detroit when these people weren't able to, you know, when they were threatening to cut the water off, right, from Detroit. And, you know, thing is, the crazy part about Detroit is that it sits on the Great Lakes. I mean, it's the largest fresh body of water in the world, one of the largest fresh bodies of water in the world, and these people are getting cut off from fresh water. It's like, how does that make any sense?
How is it any different than air? I mean, do they do the same thing with air?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like, where do we cut it off? You know, and like you were saying, water is it should be a human right. We're all part of this earth. The earth is a certain percentage water. Everybody should have a certain percentage of water that they get. But it's like the air, man. Like, sooner or later, there could be a point in time where we've polluted the earth so much that like people have to pay to have air. You know, and you got to buy a bag of air. You got to buy a canister of air to take you around for a day, or you have a big old big thing of air at your place that you refill your air with.
Sounds like a Philip K. Dick book.
Yeah, man. And I mean, this is the kind of situation we're descending into. And now we got this huge drought going on in California. And keep in mind, the water table is a shared utility, right? The water table is something that everybody that lives in a certain area has to participate in. And you got Nestle over here in California sucking that thing dry, bottling water and selling it to people. Presumably people that live on the land that the water's being siphoned out of. You know what I mean? So like, this is a total, I mean, this is a slap in the face to people down here in Southern California. We don't even have enough water for ourselves, yet Nestle wants to come in and tap all of our water. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. If you want to live long life and stuff like that, it's good to have good water, and that has been proven. And the indigenous people that have lived up to be 100 and plus years is in Ecuador, you know, and stuff like that. So it's kind of nice to know that about the water.
Yeah, I saw something about that in Ecuador, that there's like some places up there where people live like abnormally long, and they're scientists are trying to figure out why they live so long. But part of it is the water and the food and the lifestyle too. So we got this next story here, and I know people are going to be, I don't know, this is a very opinion, you know, people are going to disagree on this. Feel free to call us if you want to talk about this next story. 718-717-8296 is our phone number. Anybody that wants to call and talk to us, feel free. Anyway, Obama was in Cleveland, Ohio today, and he somehow got into this conversation about whether he thought that mandatory voting in the U.S. was a good idea. And he said that he thought it was. And he kind of said that he'd be open to talking about mandatory voting and stuff like that. Now, the reason why he was questioned was that they were asking him about, you know, campaign finance and campaign finance reform. You know, Mitt Romney and Obama both raised over $1 billion in the last election, and Obama raised $1 billion in 2012 as well. And so it's kind of funny that they're asking a guy that raised $1 billion to talk about getting money out of politics.
Mostly corporate donors.
Yeah, and it's all big money donors and stuff, and it's not even the popular support that's getting these guys their money. But, you know, Obama floated the idea out there of mandatory voting. They do it in Australia. They do it in certain countries in Europe. You know, I want to know what you guys think about that. Manny, what do you think?
Well, it's just a thing they should do, is because, you know, that's why we have a lot of corruption in Mexico. You know, it's because if I was basically, you know, let these politicians, you know, grab as much money as they can, you know, and once you do that, it's like, for instance, in Mexico, a good example, Televisa happens to be the biggest network in the world and stuff like that. And so if they donate to the president, of course, Televisa's on their side. I mean, Televisa is known to become the government's television station, you know, and per se, obviously, you know, because they contribute so much money to the president, it's not even funny. So it's not good, you know, because it's like the problem that you guys are having down there in San Diego and stuff like that. You know, when you got, you know, this guy that owns the union and now, you know, basically wants to sell it to the LA Times so that they can get into the stadiums and all this, you know, Chargers and all this stuff. And it's just, and it's, you know, Manchester, there we go. That's why he's got so much power down there in your way and stuff like that. And it's just all these rich people that control the media, you know, makes it very impossible for the good guy to get up there, you know, and it's kind of sad because that's why, you know, I've been very, you know, basically very concerned about, you know, because you need so much money to get into politics that, you know, a poor guy cannot get into and becoming a candidate for, say, the third party, because we do need three parties in California, but they don't let the third party come in. I mean, excuse me, the United States. Yeah. So.
Yeah. This topic of money in politics is huge. So, like, let's go into that first, and then we'll go. We'll talk about this whole idea of mandatory voting after that, because I think that's a whole other can of worms. But I think Jake had a few thoughts as far as, you know, what's going on with this campaign finance, you know, how corporations have hijacked the voting system. I mean,
sure, yeah.
It's fallen into an oligarchy, hasn't it? Like, it's not as much a democracy anymore as it is an oligarchy.
Yeah, it's a corporatocracy. Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what Manny said. Absolutely. I think in terms of voting, I mean, certainly we have to start off by saying it's usually a positive thing for citizens to vote. It's a civic duty, one could say. I don't know if I agree with a federal mandate necessitating it, but more importantly, two words are relevant here, and that's Citizens United. This was a Supreme Court ruling. It was ushered in very surreptitiously after 9/11 regarding what kind of money can be put into elections from corporations. Ginsburg has, you know, come right out and said this. It's the ruling that she most regrets of all her decisions. Citizens United is a catastrophe for the American electoral system. And before any kind of respectable debate on voting and voting rights can be addressed, something like Citizens United and corporate money in elections has to be addressed first, because these are not organic elections we're talking about. These are high school popularity contests with corporate money involved. That's what our elections are right now.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the article I put out earlier this week, man, I thought it was going to be the most viral article that I've ever done. But there's a foundation called the Sunshine Foundation. And by the way, this is Sunshine Week from the 15th to the 21st, I believe it is. But it's basically, it's a foundation. Their entire purpose is to bring transparency into government, right? And, you know, they believe in reforming the government and stuff. People know me. I'm not as much of I'm not as much of a reformer as I am, hey, let's rebuild and make a whole new system. But, you know, these numbers that these guys dug up, the Sunshine Foundation, are staggering. I mean, we're talking about a 76,000% return on investment, right? From dollars that are put in by corporations, by the top 200 corporations.
Oh, yeah, I saw. I remember
that. The top two corporations that donate to political campaigns receive 76,000% return on investment.
It's the biggest corporate game in town, it sounds like.
It really is, man. And that's the thing, is that, like,
wow.
You know, our entire political system has been completely hijacked. And you know, one of the most staggering numbers that came out of that whole thing, that this whole study, the amount of money that these guys get back, I'm trying to pull the number up right now. But the amount of money that they actually got back is 2/3 of the amount of federal taxes that Americans pay. And this is through federal money.
That's like, revolting.
So they put in a measly few billion dollars in lobbying per year combined, and their returns are in the trillions.
It's like the corporate version of banking dividends.
Wow.
Exactly, man. And it really is like the best investment out there. And that's the thing that is just so gross about it, is that it makes legitimate businesses look like petty change. And it's mind-boggling. I finally found the statistics here. Go ahead, Manny.
Talking about transparency in the government, Nick, can you tell us more about that investigation that happened basically down in the way in San Diego, the police department, that the results are in, and now where do they go from there on transparency?
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a fight for transparency. It seems like every corner, right? Because it's like the local police department, the DA's office. Because we just had that big case thrown out here in San Diego. The charges dropped on those guys that were facing life over rap lyrics and over Facebook posts. None of these agencies, whether we're talking about local cops, the DA, the court system, all the way up to the very top, we're talking about executive level. We're talking about the Senate, talking about the Congress. It's like a fight for transparency at every angle, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Big time.
So before we jump into go fully into this, we got a caller on from 956. You're on the Anti-Media. Would you like to comment on the role of money in politics, campaign finance, anything like that? How's it going?
Hello.
Yeah, 956, you're on the air. Oh, 956 is gone.
He was censored.
So, all right, here's the numbers here. $5.8 billion between 2007 and 2012 from the top 200 most active corporations giving money to politics. What they received in federal business and support, $4.4 trillion with a T.
A few bucks.
So basically, almost six billion they spent. They got 2/3 of the U.S. taxpayers, the taxes that they paid for all their labor.
How is that not direct evidence of complete corporate government collusion? That's a corporatocracy. I mean, that's. Do you need what would better evidence look like than that? I don't think there would be better evidence than that. This is a fabulous article, Nick, and this infographic here needs to go out. More people need to see this.
Yeah, and you know what? I wrote this article, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, dude, everybody's gonna read this article because I can't believe that the government that these corporations are reaping a 76,000% return on investment, and it only got like 500 shares, and I'm like, what in the hell is going on?
Corporatocracy is my biggest passion, most passionate issue, and I find so many people, it seems like, don't care. I mean, we love corporations. We want people to go out and succeed and make their businesses. Sure, yeah, it's a fabulous thing, but at what point are people not seeing the criminality behind corporate collusion with government?
Exactly, and that's the whole thing, man. Like, there's nothing wrong with being an entrepreneur. There's nothing wrong with being a business person. There's nothing wrong with being an innovator. When you get to the point where you become a part of the government and use the government's influence to make your profits, that's when you become an evil mother effer.
That's called fascism, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. It really is. It's very, very fascist. And that is kind of what this graph, this chart, it's on the Anti. I mean, you have to scroll down a page or two because we've posted 15 articles today. But you're going to have to scroll down like two pages, but it's called Corporations Lobbying Government Reaps 76,000% Return. You guys should read this article, and then at the bottom I link to the actual research from the Sunshine Foundation. Read that whole thing. It's really long. I can only include a few excerpts in the article because it's a 5-page research paper. But, dude, these are eye-opening numbers, and if people can read this stuff, I mean, it obviously didn't go viral online, but if people can take this and spread it in their real personal lives and show how much of a conflict of interest is going on, I think people would start to, it would open people's eyes.
If Stalin had a baby with Donald Trump, it would be our current electoral system.
Exactly.
Complete statism mixed with late evil capitalism.
Yeah, man. And it's like, it's the NFL kind of sums it up perfectly, right? The NFL is a great example of what's going on. Because for one, like, I look at it from a much more historical aspect. The NFL to me functions as like the new version of what the Romans had, which were the gladiators, right? It's like neo-gladiatorism, right? And so that's one thing. The NFL is beneficial to the government because it keeps people preoccupied with sports and all that other
Absolutely.
Shit. And they don't worry about – when you're watching a football game – and don't get me wrong. I watch NFL too. I'm not going to lie. I watch NFL I wouldn't say a regular basis, but when my team's playing, I watch.
You're a cheerleader just like the rest of us, man.
Yeah. And so, this is a perfect distraction. So that's why the government loves it so much. It's a great distraction. But then look at it from like, we're dealing with it right here in San Diego. I'm sure people that pay attention to sports news will know that San Diego is going through this whole thing with, are the Chargers going to relocate to LA? Are we going to build them a stadium? All this whole huge debate, like, the people that don't care about NFL are like, yeah, who cares if the Chargers live? The people that like the team are like, no, we want the Chargers to stay here. Let's build them a stadium. Here's the thing that people aren't talking about. The stadium is financed with – the reason why it's such a controversy, they're trying to finance the stadium with tax dollars, man.
Absolutely.
We're all on the hook. Anybody who lives in the county is on the hook for building up this stadium. But then the team gets to use it, and they make all the profits from it, and they keep all the profits.
Absolutely.
It's like we're paying for all this shit, yet at the same time, they profit off of it. And so this is the same exact thing that's going on back to what's going on in Germany. The thing about austerity and the reason why people are so pissed off in Greece, in Cyprus, in people in Germany, people in all these countries, Spain, France, the reason they're so pissed off is because all of their money had been collected for years and years and years from the government. The government used it to make all this infrastructure and stuff, albeit, yeah, they governments are always bureaucratic and wasteful, but still they have all this infrastructure that they've built and they probably spent too much money building. But guess what? That money was public money. It was collected through taxes. And now what's going on now in Europe is austerity, privatization, and they're taking all that stuff that was built on the backs of taxpayers and they're giving it over to Goldman Sachs. They're giving it over to all these bankster, trust funds and corporations and conglomerati. And that's why people in Germany are rioting over shit.
Now, why aren't we?
It's going on all over the world, man. It's going on right here with the NFL. It's going on with the media. It's going on with the big pharmaceutical companies like the infographic. If you guys go back to the article, look at the infographic. Look how much money that the big pharma is reaping on their return. They're the highest one. Big pharma is reaping a 77,500% return on investment on every dollar they lobby the government. So imagine an investment where you give $1 and you get $775 back for that $1 investment. That is what Big Pharma is doing with our government, and we're the ones paying for it. This article, this stat, this fucking fact should piss everybody off. We should be rioting at the Federal Reserve right now, burning that shit down like they're doing in Europe, but we're not. Because we got NFL, we got a bunch of other cool things that we could distract us with. We got Hillary Clinton's emails too. Let's not forget about Hillary Clinton's email. We got Kanye West. We got all these we got all these mother efforts.
A quick point, NFL.
NFL. Oh, and the dress. We can't forget about the dress.
Monica Lewinsky. Oh wait, that's way too old. Sorry.
Well, this article that Nick is writing, I'm trying to realize also all his pictures are distracting the young ladies. You know, I know he's a ladies' man, but I noticed the comments that I've seen on his pictures, you know. So.
The NFL and football, let's also not forget that it is the perfect vessel for disinformation and propaganda via advertising as well. These kinds of things are important to remember as we're watching, as we're putting more emphasis on the Super Bowl commercials as we are in the game itself. These are million-dollar commercials that are just straight nationalistic propaganda.
Yeah, and it's
vis-a-vis propaganda, corporatocracy.
And a lot of it is like so contradictory. It's like when McDonald's sponsors the Olympics. You know what I'm saying? And they did. They sponsored the last Olympic Games.
What two things could be more antithetical than a Big Mac and Olympic accolades?
Exactly, man. And that's the thing that's most horrible is that, like, even though the Olympics Commission know damn well that McDonald's is bad for you, because McDonald's is willing to pay the highest price, they're able to affiliate McDonald's food with the Olympics. The average person that doesn't do any research, that, you know, is hand-fed information, I don't blame them, because the system has them so busy and other things they can't go out and do the research. They affiliate McDonald's with being healthy, even though that's the complete opposite of the truth.
It's a lie and it's a crime, and you have to regulate it, and there's no one else that can regulate it but the government. So I know we are ostensibly not pro-big government and we don't want to be statist, but the only body that can regulate these corporations is the government.
Well, I kind of agree with you, but in a way, I think differently, because the biggest thing to me that has been regulating McDonald's lately is their profit margins. And I don't know if you've seen it, but their their recent reports have been horrible, man. They have been tanking.
Yeah, and Monsanto, right?
Yeah, Monsanto as well. And so you could tell, you know, make McDonald's label their food cancerous. Here in California, when you go to the drive-through window, and if you go inside a McDonald's store, there's a little sign on the counter that says there are products known to the state of California that may cause cancer because of there's like some byproduct of frying potatoes that has like this chemical in it that can cause cancer. So like, despite all that stuff, you know, and like that's part of the government regulation. The Attorney General of California says you have to put this thing in your window. But that doesn't actually deter that many people from going to eat there. What I think more or less is deterring people is people like on the internet, and people spreading information are starting to let people know, like, look, dude, McDonald's is absolute shit food. And like today, one of my friends shared an article. One of my Facebook friends that is a personal friend of mine that I've known long before I ever got into activism shared an article from a website called Eat Local Grown. Eat Local Grown is a website of one of our friends of the anti-media. And they put out an article that I wrote like over a year ago, and it basically talks about how the diet soda is actually not reducing the rates of diabetes; it's increasing it. And then just this week, a new study just came out that showed that diet soda in the later years of your life causes you to gain weight. Diet soda doesn't make you skinny; it makes you fat.
Is it because of the aspartame?
Yeah, I mean, most of it is because the aspartame isn't recognized by your body, and therefore when you have a sugar craving, you drink this diet soda and it doesn't fill that craving. So then you drink another diet soda and another diet soda.
Because what does the body do when it doesn't recognize a foreign object? It surrounds it with fat, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, these are the ideas, man, and these are people that aren't technically in the activist movement or even in like the whole truth seeking movement. People that are just more or less random people that we know are starting to come across this information thanks to the internet and thanks to things going viral and people starting to question things. The information is spreading. We are joined now by our co-host DB Schwartz. How you doing, man?
What's up, DB?
Hey, how's it going, fellas? Doing good.
And welcome to the party.
There's a lot of stuff to talk about, man. I don't know. I have no idea what you guys went over, but have you guys beat to death the whole electronic voting booth fraud that now they're going to bring up with the Israeli election? And I think 30% of Israelis are Arab, and they're basically saying, you can't count a single one of us for him, so where'd you get this whole 50% or 57% he had? Like, it's mathematically impossible, you know?
We mostly just talked about Kanye.
No, man, actually the main topic we went over so far, let's jump into this Netanyahu stuff. Why don't you spearhead it? So far we talked about mostly the European Central Bank, dude, and how the Germans were straight up standing up to that shit today.
Wow, yeah. I mean, they're going to do it because Greece has already defaulted and said they're going to give them back 5% of what they owe. So that's going to totally collapse the house of cards, man. So, of course, they're anti-austerity. They're about to lose every benefit that Germany's famous for because they're going to be broke.
So what's going on with this election, man? I got some opinions on this election.
Well, the same stuff that stole the elections for Bush back in what? When did they install the electronic voting system? The whole thing with Florida about how Al Gore lost to that crap and then lost the presidency.
Yeah, back in 2000, back in 99?
Yeah. Those things they were built by an Israeli company, and they've been using them even before then. And, I mean, they're completely – you have no idea. There's no physical proof of anything. There's just you saying someone pushed that button. That's all there is. So these things have no credence at all. They're completely fraudulent. And if 30% of Israel's is Arab, and you know that at best 1% voted for Netanyahu, if any, then you're talking already about like 2.5 million people right there that didn't vote for him. So you got to go look at the actual voting count and see if these numbers really match up. Because if Netanyahu won with 57%, how many people voted? I bet you every single eligible Arab voter voted so they could vote against him, and that's 2.5 million against him. So it shouldn't be too hard to tell if it was fraud or not.
Yeah, and there's some really good documentaries out there on like the whole voting fraud thing, because you know back in it's kind of a rolling joke now. It's like it's actually kind of funny to people sometimes that the whole like how Bush stole the election from Gore and all that. Dude, there's some documentaries out there that provide some pretty compelling evidence that, yeah, the election was stolen by Bush.
Well, 2004, too.
You can't tell who voted for who without some physical proof. See, if we did it on our phones, that's so much better, Nick, because that's my phone. I got it in my pocket. That's who I voted for. You know?
2004 was actually a greater election fraud than 2000. 2004, they actually used terrorism as an excuse to close down one of the most heated electoral places in Ohio-Dade, and that was the swing county. So 2004 was actually a bigger heist than 2000.
Who were the candidates back then?
Oh, Kerry and Bush.
Yeah, but again, though, still, this is what I want to go into.
Yeah, does it matter?
Yeah, this is what I want to go into next. Kerry and Bush are fucking cousins.
Right.
Right?
Literally?
And like, yeah, they're literally cousins, right?
So Obama's a cousin to all of them too. I think
Obama's
he's like
a second cousin out, and then you know both Kerry and Bush were like bones, skull and bonesmen, right?
They're all lovers too.
So, but here's the thing to me, like this is to me what's the most dangerous about this whole thing, and like it goes back to what's going on in Israel too. And if what DB is saying is true, and I seriously don't doubt this at all that it was hijacked, that the machines were rigged or hacked or they were just manipulated in one way or another. This is what's even more dangerous. It's like, for one, democracy is flawed, right? Democracy is a big problem, and we've been dealing with democracy for 2,000 plus years. We've been trying to improve it. Every time someone has a revolution, they create a constitution, they try to improve democracy every time. Of course, it almost never works. But here's what's even more dangerous. The illusion of democracy. When people cast these votes and they think, they feel like, I cast my vote, my voice matters, and my voice counts. And it goes into this machine, and they're like, well, it didn't go my way, but you know what? At least I voted, you know, so I can't be too pissed off about it. And Manny, chime in on this for me, dude, because I'm here in San Diego. All of our terrestrial radio stations are broadcast out of Tijuana. Every Sunday, they run all day. They run ads for the Mexican government. And what do those ads say? All day, they say, our democracy is real. Your voice counts. Your voice truly matters. This is why you should vote. This is what you gotta do.
You're right about that. That's how I know that this movement of the 43 and everything is going against President Peña Nieto. I know it's working big time because now they're running scared. Now they're trying to make it sound like they really want democracy and stuff like that. So I mean, those ads are just driving me nuts. Actually, and you're right about that, man.
Exactly, man. It's an illusion of democracy, and that's what's even more scary. Because now the people in Israel are going to be like, you know what? We gave it our best, but damn, Netanyahu still won. Because for the most part, in the mainstream media, they're not going to question the voting machines. They're not going to question the tactics. I mean, Netanyahu came out and was saying, I am not going to allow the Palestinians to have an independent state. I want to kick all the Arabs out of Israel. I mean, this is what this guy was saying, bro. And this is what won him the election, supposedly. But that's the most dangerous thing, is the illusion that you think that it's happening. In Mexico, they're trying to brainwash people to say, oh yeah, your vote really, really counts. It really, truly counts. And they run ads on that all day. All day they run these ads. And so they're trying to make people think that their voice is actually being heard, because they know that that's the way to make people complacent. Now, here's the thing. And it goes to a story that we broke today. I guess we didn't break it, but we were one of the first to report on it. Obama is calling for mandatory voting in the United States. And we touched on this, and this is our next topic. He hasn't put it in writing, but he was questioned on it today. He was caught slightly off guard. He said, yeah, I wouldn't be opposed to thinking about mandatory voting. My opinion is that mandatory voting is dangerous, man. Mandatory voting, then every single person that votes is going to be falling for this illusion of choice. Now, what good is it to make everybody vote if our only choice is Republican and Democrat? And it goes back to what Manny was saying, man. Where are our other options? Even in Israel, they have coalition government. Even in Israel, they have 6, 7, 8 different parties that actually hold office. In the United States, we have Republican, Democrat, and we have about 2 people that are independents in the entire government. And that's it. So by these guys even hinting at the fact that we can have mandatory voting, like Obama hinted at today,
right,
that is a dangerous prospect, because everybody is going to be even more complacent.
If we do something like that, then some senator is going to have to attach a rider that's going to say, If any party gets 5% of any vote, they become federally funded. That way we're going to have splinter parties, and we can stop bullshit legislation from going through like they do in Europe. In Europe, no legislation gets passed, but so what? They can't get any more tyrannical, or they have to do it in super slow-mo.
Exactly. Well, let me tell you a bomb about that. In Mexico, the reason people vote, a lot of people vote, not because they want to vote, is because if you don't vote down there, you can lose your job. Think about that.
That's horrifying. I don't think that could ever happen here.
Hey, hopefully not. You know, but they're talking about it now. It was just floated out there today. I mean, of course.
Well, the mandatory voting part, not the losing your job. Well, I guess, yeah. I guess who would have thought that healthcare
would. Voting is mandatory. Obviously, there's a punishment if you don't.
Right.
Just like Obamacare, man. If you don't have insurance by a certain point in time, you know, you're going to get hit with something. Taxes, fines, tickets, something. And at the end, if you don't pay that shit, well, you could go to jail.
This is still just straw man legislation, though. None of this is like really, what would be the worst case scenario of mandatory voting? It's just a terrifying prospect, but.
It's so that they can say, look, there is no opposition. Everybody supports us.
Right. Okay.
Mandatorily.
You answered my question.
So, yeah, it's just ridiculous. It, like I said, right. There has to be that kind of rider going with it.
It's like, hey, we're the freest country in the world. Make sure you vote.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're going to jail.
Yeah. Manufactured consent. Like, this is everything Chomsky wrote about in Manufactured Consent.
Yeah,
and you're right.
I'm a
it is
huge Chomsky fan. Chomsky is amazing.
Yeah, and he's actually become a lot more – he's gone – viciously to the left in the last 5 years. I mean, he's on his way out, unfortunately. The man is up there in years, and but if you listen to his I don't even want to call it rhetoric, I like to think of it as gospel, but if you listen to Chomsky over the years, he's gone more to the left, and he's a great man.
Chomsky's legit, man, and as you said, he moved to the left, and I don't like to specify between left and right, but I think people all over the spectrum can agree on certain things, you know. And
I guess progressive is the better word.
You know, and like for me, it's like, you know, I have so many friends to the left of me, to the right of me, in front of me, behind me. But we all understand that we kind of want to be able to be free, right? We all want to be able to live our lives the way we think that they should be lived. And that is like the big problem that we face, and we all have this common enemy, is that we have other people always trying to dictate, or by, you know, by one way or another, indirectly or directly, whether it be taxing us and using that money to go bomb people in Libya, or whether it's to use our money to go imprison people for using weed in Texas, or whatever it is that we disagree with. The fact of the matter is that the government right now, like you said, Jake, is very much a fascist government. It's like, hey, you know, you give us your consent by voting, and once you vote, well, you got really much no say over anything else after that. And we're going to go ahead and enrich our buddies that run the banks and run Wall Street, and we're going to give you a little bone here and there with food stamps and welfare. But for the most part, we're just going to go around the world and beat the shit out of countries and take their resources, and we're not going to share the benefits with any of you guys. Because a lot of that's the sign of a declining empire. Because most empires, right, at the beginning of an empire, at the onset, it's like, all right, hell yeah, we're expansionary. We're going to go out. We're going to pillage. We're going to take resources. All of our citizens are going to reap the benefits. And then as the empire starts to mature, well, then the people at the top start getting greedier and greedier and greedier. And then now we're overthrowing Libya, and the only people profiting are Exxon CEOs. You know what I mean? And so this is, you know, we're overthrowing Iraq, and the only guys making money are people from Halliburton and their buddies. You know, and so it's we've fallen into this state now of a declining empire, man. And that's why I'm so much like, in certain ways, I'm opposed to like reforming and reformists and all that stuff, because I mean, shit, empires collapse, bro. They don't fix. You know, I don't know one empire in the world that had a soft landing. You know what I mean?
Unless they splinter, that's the only way, and that's happened a few times.
Yes, yeah, that's what tends to happen, man. You know, yeah. And some people would argue that the American Civil War was when our, you know, the empire almost fractured a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
So you see, we would be entering the next dark age in that case. I wrote a short story about how the revolution would come about, and it involved crowdsourcing executioners to hit the people up from the top. So you're using a peer-to-peer Bitcoin-type system to anonymize the funding of picking out people from the top.
You know, there was actually a website that had a bounty, a Bitcoin bounty,
yes,
on Ben Bernanke's head.
That's right. It was a couple of people. He was one of them. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but without reform, I mean, we would be in the next, it would be absolute anarchy. Now, maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe lots of people will die. We have to accept that fact. But of course, lots of people are dying right now in the greatest country on earth. Right.
I think with reform, man. Yeah, exactly, man. People dying here at an amazing rate. I mean, the cops kill more people in the U.S. than any other country in the world. I mean, even fascist dictatorships that are openly fascist dictatorships. I mean, even in China, bro, even the Chinese cops with those billions of people they got out there, they aren't killing as many people as American cops are. They're probably putting people in internment camps and putting people in re-education camps. But shit, tell me that we're not doing the same thing. We got the largest prison population in the world. So in fact, we're worse than China in many ways, because they've got a way larger population. We have a larger population of people in prison.
I had a crazy debate with someone on Facebook about why the difference between American fascism and Chinese fascism.
You have to vote with your dollars. Forget about voting any other way, you know. But here we go. A question of the day here for DB, Jake, and Nick, okay? I support, you know, and I vote with my dollar to go to the mom and pop coffee shop now. But now, if I want to talk about race, what's the deal about having to go to Starbucks and they're going to start talking about race when they serve you coffee?
Yeah, man, that's a pretty controversial subject. Yeah. I personally, man, I think it's kind of a good idea, because I don't know, race is a subject that like people don't want to talk about, right? It's a taboo subject. And it's, in a way, it's almost like drugs. It's like, well, if we don't ever talk about the fact that people are massively addicted to drugs and shit, well, how are we ever gonna solve it? You know? And to me, it's like, if we never talk about racism And a lot of people that I know that aren't, they don't openly say racist things, but man, underlying, there are some racist tendencies of a lot of people that don't consider themselves racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a conversation that we have to bring up into the mainstream so that people can like really talk about it and start realizing, yeah, you know what? I am racist in certain ways and I need to realize that and, you know, consciously oppose those thoughts in my head. You know, and it's with so many people, and every race can be racist against other races. I mean, it's not just a white issue. Any place in the world where there's a majority population and there's another minority population that's of a different ethnic background, 99.9% of the time, the minority population with a different ethnic background is going to experience racism, whether we're talking
about a Tibetan.
Exactly. Whether we're talking about Tibetans in China, whether we're talking about Africans in South Africa, whether we're talking about Indians and Native Americans in Mexico, whether we're talking about black people in the United States, everywhere that has a minority population that's of a different ethnic background is going to experience that, man. And I don't know, like, I can't stand Starbucks as a corporation. Like, I can't stand them, man, because they put a bunch of local coffee shops out of business, and it sucks now because I can't stand drinking Starbucks. But now here in Chula Vista, I talk about this all the time, we're in a food desert.
Right.
We don't even have an independent coffee shop that's worth going to.
Right.
Because Starbucks has done its business. Now, as a consumer, you know, and they say, oh, well, it's supply and demand. So, well, as a consumer here in my local area, I'm pissed off because we don't have a coffee shop because of Starbucks. But
I think
on this issue, despite the fact that I can't stand them as a company, can't stand their corporate practices, all that stuff, I think they're kind of right, man, because we got to increase the conversation on race, because that's the only way where we can get people to really start breaking down those barriers, man, is to start talking about it on an uncomfortable level.
Well, absolutely, and especially because look at how race is leveraged by the government in things like the Ferguson case and stuff like that. They use race to divide and conquer. They use race to distract us. They use race to drive a wedge in to issues we agree on. The people agree on something and they use race. Race is a tool utilized expertly by American democracy.
Exactly. Exactly. And the only way to get past that is to become a post-racial society. And, you know, people like to say that America is already a post-racial society. No. Throw that window out the idea. No way in hell we're a post-racial society.
Ridiculous.
Even the Department of Justice report showed how racially biased the policing is in the U.S. And that's coming from the government. That's
right.
The little bit that they're willing to acknowledge. We're in a hugely racially divided society. But I think bringing it up to the forefront, bringing that conversation up with in your personal lives and stuff, that's how we can get through it. And that's how we can unite all the races together by talking about what's going on. And then eventually, like you were saying, Jake, we can get to that point where we're not able to get split apart on those lines, you know, where we are living as one.
All kinds of personal politics. The personal politics are not just race, but gender, sexual orientation, all those things are used to divide us. These are all things that the government shouldn't have their hand in whatsoever. And not only they have their hand in, they're probing us with it, you know?
The stuff the government should do, which is stuff like prisons, is now privatized. It's like everything's backwards, and now they're getting into healthcare, and they don't need to be in healthcare. That's up to me. That's personal. So it's just ridiculous. And I have a pop quiz question real quick, because this is an interesting statistic. What's bigger, the Chinese military or the United States prison population?
I'm gonna go with the United States prison population.
It's close. They're only 100,000 less.
That's mind-boggling.
2.2 million to 2.3 million.
Wait a minute. What's the comparison again? So
the U.S. prison population is 2.2 million people, and the Chinese military in all is 2.3 million people.
Wow.
So don't worry about an invasion. We'll just open the prisons. You know what I'm saying?
I'm trying to get my head around that.
Yeah, man. And they keep wanting to sell us this red threat, and they want to sell us this, you know, Russia's going to conquer the world, Iran is going to blow the world up and stuff.
Right.
And it's just such an empty argument, you know. And it brings us back to this whole Netanyahu thing. Keep in mind, it wasn't only, a few weeks ago when the U.S. Congress invited Netanyahu out to go and give a speech to call for war with Iran, and the Republicans cheered it on. Here's the thing, man. Right before he came to the U.S., it was like a week beforehand, I think, Netanyahu was exposed. You know that big speech he gave at the UN where he had that little Acme-looking bomb, that little dynamite-looking bomb that he had there that he was drawing on and stuff. And he's like, oh, the red line is like right here. Iran's about to have the bomb. You know, here's the thing. He's been saying that since 92, at least before 1992. And documents were leaked to Al Jazeera and to The Guardian simultaneously only about a week before he came and gave his big speech in front of Congress. That proved that when he was in front of the UN, he was lying. The Mossad's intelligence that they had on Iran's nuclear program was showing that they were not even building the bomb, that they hadn't even given the orders to work on the bomb yet. And yet Netanyahu came out in front of the UN and he said they're only 3 months to 6 months away from having the bomb.
Are you saying a world leader lied to the UN?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. But here's what's even worse. What I'm also saying is that only a week after he got caught lying, the U.S. Congress invited him to come speak to us, knowing that he was a fucking liar. And then only it's been like a month and a half that now he just won re-election as the prime minister of a country, even though this fool's been exposed as being a bold-faced liar. Like, how sick and twisted do you have to think that we actually have a democracy when a guy that could be sitting there lying to people right to their faces gets reelected only a month later?
It's no different than Bush. It's no different than Bush and our people. I mean, they completely fabricated all of the weapons of mass destruction stuff. We voted, you know, that man, I dare say man, back into office.
And then
that's just what they do.
And
that's
then,
their
you
thing.
Know, that's the last administration. Then you got Obama's big elephant in the room, which is Libya, you know, and Hillary, and they're all tied into that.
It's
and
bad. Didn't kill as many people.
There was 50,000 people have died in Libya since the
revolution. It's a lot. It's terrible, but it doesn't compare to
it doesn't Iraq. Compare to the million people that have died in Iraq.
Yeah.
But
still bad,
thing.
Though. Still bad.
I found these leaked conversations from Denis Kucinich that he had some dialogue with Gaddafi's son. Before we ever bombed Libya, and
what?
Denis Kucinich recently, I don't want to say Denis Kucinich leaked the information. Somebody leaked the information to Ron Paul, and Ron Paul published it on his website. And it was this conversation between Denis Kucinich and Gaddafi's son. And you know what Gaddafi's son was saying? He's like, dude, he's like, it's like the WMD, man. He's like, the news is saying that we're bombing our civilians, that we're bombing our people. None of that's true. He's like, there are Islamic extremists trying to take over our country, and we're just trying to fend them off. That's all that's going on.
It was just a coup. Did you see on Syrian TV yesterday or the day before that the people they interviewed in Syria were going, there's no civil war. We're fighting a coup right now, you dumbasses, because it was some Western journalist that asked that. And the funny thing is I never thought about it like that. I always thought along the lines of they were using the civil war as an excuse. There is no civil war. It's simply just a coup going on right now.
Well, the two kind of overlap in some cases. Civil war, I mean, you know.
I believe the civil war was manufactured is what I'm saying, because the people there don't know what's going on.
Well, what they do is they, you know, they take advantage of any organic dissent that's going on, and they insert their
right.
CIA playbook into, you know, and this is known. We can't prove that they use this playbook in Syria and they use it in Libya. But what we can prove is that they used it in Nicaragua, in Guatemala,
mm-hmm.
and back
in the Ukraine,
70s, 80s. Yeah, they were using Ronald Reagan. Yeah, dude, Cuba, everywhere. They were using the same playbook, man.
So why would we think that they would just suddenly stop doing
this? Yeah, why
stuff?
Would we think that, oh, we don't participate? You know, what's her name? Pataki? She's the new White House spokeswoman after the one
right.
who stepped down. She came out the other day and was saying that the U.S. doesn't condone unconstitutional overthrows of any government. And like the guy that was asking the question like laughed. He was like, I can't believe that you actually said that. Anyway, that's it. That's the end of the show. Sorry to cut it off. Thank you everyone for calling in. Thank you, Manny, DB, everybody else.
Buenas noches,
guys.
Adios.
blow, blow through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.